the same forum, Elder Stephen Augustine explained the roles of silence and negotiation in Mi'kmaq law. He said, silence is a concept and can be used as a consequence for a wrong action or to teach a lesson. Silence is employed according to proper procedures and ends at a particular time, too. Elder Augustine suggested that there is both a place for talking about reconciliation and a need for quiet reflection. Reconciliation cannot occur without listening, contemplation, meditation, and deeper internal deliberation. Silence in the face of residential school harms is an appropriate response for many indigenous peoples. We must enlarge the space for respectful silence and journeying towards reconciliation, particularly for survivors who regard this as a key to healing. There is a place for discussion and negotiation for those who want to move beyond silence. Dialogue and mutual adjustment are significant components of Mi'kmaq law. Elder Augustine suggested that other dimensions of human experience, our relationship with the earth and all living beings, are also relevant in working towards reconciliation. This profound insight is an indigenous law which could be applied more generally. Elder Reg Croshu told the commission that indigenous peoples' worldviews, oral history, traditions, and practices have much to teach us about how to establish respectful relationships among peoples and with the land and all living things. Learning how to live together in a good way happens through sharing stories and practicing reconciliation in our everyday lives. When we talk about the concept of reconciliation, I think that some of the stories that I've heard in our culture and stories are important. These stories are so important as theories, but at the same time, stories are important to oral cultures. So when we talk about stories, we talk about defining our environment and how we look at authorities that come from the land and how that land, when we talk about our relationship with the land, how we look at forgiveness and reconciliation is so important when we look at it historically. We have stories in our culture about our superheroes, how we treat each other, stories about how animals and plants give us authorities and privileges to use plants as healing. But we also have stories about practices. How would we practice reconciliation? How would we practice getting together to talk about reconciliation in an oral perspective? And those practices are so important. As Elder Croshu explained further, reconciliation requires talking, but our conversations must be broader than Canada's conventional approaches. Aboriginal and non-Aboriginal Canadians, from an Aboriginal perspective, as Elder Croshu explained further, reconciliation requires talking, but our conversations must be broader than Canada's conventional approaches. Reconciliation between Aboriginal and non-Aboriginal Canadians from an Aboriginal perspective also requires reconciliation with the natural world. If human beings resolve problems between themselves but continue to destroy the natural world, then reconciliation remains incomplete. This is a perspective that we as commissioners have repeatedly heard, that reconciliation will never occur unless we are also reconciled with the earth. Mi'kmaq and other indigenous laws stress that humans must journey through life in conversation and negotiation with all creation. Reciprocity and mutual respect help sustain our survival. It is this kind of healing and survival that is needed in moving forward from the residential school experience. Over the course of its work, the Commission created space for exploring the meaning and concepts of reconciliation. In public sharing circles at national events and community hearings, We bore witness to powerful moments of truth sharing and humbling acts of reconciliation. Many survivors had never been able to tell their own families the whole truth of what happened to them in the schools. At hearings in Regina, Saskatchewan, Elder Kirby Littleton said, "I never told. I just told my children, my grandchildren. I went to boarding school and that's all. I never shared my experiences." Then he spoke to honor the memory of relatives who have passed on. Simone, an Inuk survivor from Chesterfield Inlet, Nunavut, said, "I'm here for my parents. Did you miss me when I went away? Did you cry for me? And I'm here for my brother, who was a victim, and my niece at the age of 5, who suffered a head injury and never came home. And her parents never had closure. To this day, we have not found the grave in Winnipeg. And I'm here for them first. And that's why I'm making a public statement." Others talked about the importance of reconciling with family members and cautioned that this process is just beginning. Patrick Etherington, a survivor from St. Anne's Residential School in Fort Albany, Ontario, walked with his son and others from Cochrane, Ontario, to the national event in Winnipeg. He said that the walk helped him to reconnect with his son, and that he just wanted to be here because I feel this process that we are starting, we got a long ways to go. We saw the children and grandchildren of survivors who, in searching for their own identity and place in the world, found compassion and gained new respect for their relatives who went to the schools. Once they heard about and began to understand their experiences. At the Northern National Event in Inuvik, Northwest Territories, Maxine Lacorne said, As a young lady, I talked with people my age because I have a good understanding. I talk to people who are residential school survivors because I like to hear their stories, you know, and it gives me more understanding of my parents. It is an honor to be here, to sit here among you guys, survivors. Wow, you guys are strong people. You guys survived everything, and we're still going to be here. They tried to take us away. They tried to take our language away. You guys are still here. We're still here. I'm still here. We heard about children whose small acts of everyday resistance in the face of rampant abuse, neglect, and bullying in the schools were quite simply heroic. At the TRC British Columbia National Event, Elder Barney Williams said that many of us, through our pain and suffering, managed to hold our heads up. We were brave children. We saw old bonds of childhood friendship renewed as people gathered and found each other at TRC-sponsored events. Together they remembered the horrors they had endured, even as they recalled with pride long-forgotten accomplishments in various school sports teams, music or arts activities. We heard from resilient, courageous survivors who, despite their traumatic childhood experiences, went on to become influential leaders in their communities in all walks of Canadian life, including politics, government, law, education, medicine, the corporate world, and the arts. We heard from officials representing the federal government that administered the schools. In a sharing circle at the Manitoba National Event, the Honorable Chuck Stroll, then Minister of Indian Affairs and Northern Development Canada, said, "Governments like to write policy, and they like to write legislation, and they like to codify things and so on. And Aboriginal people want to talk about restoration, reconciliation, forgiveness, about healing, about truth. And those things are all things of the heart of a relationship and not of government policy. Governments do a bad job of that." Church representatives spoke about their struggles to right the relationship with Aboriginal peoples. In Inuvik, Anglican Archbishop Fred Hiltz told us that As a church, we are renewing our commitment to work with the Assembly of First Nations in addressing long-standing Indigenous justice issues. As a church, we are requiring anyone who serves the church at a national level to go through anti-racism training. We have a lot to do in our church to make sure that racism is eliminated. Educators told us about their growing awareness of the inadequate role that post-secondary institutions played in training the teachers who taught in the schools. They have pledged to change educational practices and curriculum to be more inclusive of Aboriginal knowledge and history. Artists shared their ideas and feelings about truth and reconciliation through songs, paintings, dance, film, and other media. Corporations provided resources to bring survivors to events and, in some cases, some of their own staff and managers. For non-Aboriginal Canadians who came to bear witness to survivors' life stories, the experience was powerful. One woman said simply, "By listening to your story, my story can change. By listening to your story, I can change." Reconciliation is relationship. In its 2012 interim report, the TRC recommended that federal, provincial, and territorial governments and all parties to the settlement agreement undertake to meet and explore the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples as a framework for reconciliation in Canada. We remain convinced that the United Nations Declaration provides the necessary principles, norms, and standards for reconciliation to flourish in 21st century Canada. A reconciliation framework is one of Canada's political and legal systems. Education and religious institutions, the corporate sector, and civic society function in ways that are consistent with the principles set out in the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, which Canada has endorsed. Together, Canadians must do more than just talk about reconciliation. We must learn how to practice reconciliation in our everyday lives, with ourselves and our families and in our communities, governments, places of worship, schools, and workplaces. To do so constructively, Canadians must remain committed to the ongoing work of establishing and maintaining respectful relationships. For many survivors and their families, this commitment is foremost about healing themselves, their communities and nations in ways that revitalize individuals as well as Indigenous cultures, languages, spirituality, laws, and governance systems. For governments, building a respectful relationship involves dismantling a centuries-old political and bureaucratic culture in which all too often policies and programs are still based on failed notions of assimilation. For churches, demonstrating long-term commitment requires atoning for actions within the residential schools. Respecting Indigenous spirituality and supporting Indigenous people's struggles for justice and equity. Schools must teach history in ways that foster mutual respect, empathy, and engagement. All Canadian children and youth deserve to know Canada's honest history, including what happened in the residential schools, and to appreciate the rich history and knowledge of Indigenous nations who continue to make such a strong contribution to Canada, including our very name and collective identity as a country. For Canadians from all walks of life, reconciliation offers a new way of living together.